Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Jeremy Leeming, Director of Communications at the National Health Law Program, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Jeremy Leeming, Communications Director of the National Health Law Program, and thanks for all of you for joining us today for a briefing on the Trump administration's threats to weaken the Affordable Care Act's non-discrimination provision, Section 1557. The ACA's non-discrimination provision is integral to the law and intended to combat discrimination in our healthcare system. Today's call is hosted by the National Health Law Program, founded in 1969 to advance health rights of low-income individuals and underserved communities, and the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights, founded in 1950, and includes more than 200 national organizations among its members. To provide more context for this discussion, it's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker, Vinita Gupta, a longtime extraordinary civil rights litigator and advocate. Before taking the helm at the Leadership Conference, Ms. Gupta led the Obama administration's Civil Rights Division, where she tirelessly worked to advance reforms in the criminal justice system, the rights of those living with disabilities, and the rights of LGBTQ individuals. Vinita, if you could give us context to the conversation, it would be greatly appreciated.
Great. Thank you so much, Jeremy, and thank you, everyone, for joining the call. My name is Vinita Gupta. As Jeremy said, I'm the president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition charged by its diverse membership of more than 200 national organizations working tirelessly to protect the civil and human rights of all. The Leadership Conference is proud to join with our partners in support of the rules that implement Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability in certain health programs or activities. Such discrimination creates unequal access to health and health care, and rather than being distributed equally, the burdens of costly health care fall disproportionately on communities of color and other underserved populations, which are more likely to experience higher rates of unemployment, to have jobs that don't have health insurance, and to have lower incomes that put higher insurance premiums out of their financial reach. Section 1557 builds on longstanding federal civil rights laws and is the first federal civil rights law to prohibit sex discrimination in healthcare. We have to ensure that everyone in this country has access to quality, affordable health insurance coverage and healthcare. Since the ACA was enacted, members of the Leadership Conference have strongly advocated for the full and complete implementation of Section 1557. And we were pleased that the rule includes important new protections to prohibit sex discrimination. It protects transgender people on the basis of gender identity and largely protects lesbian, gay, and bisexual people on the basis of sex stereotypes. And the Leadership Conference read with deep concern the government's May 2nd court filing in Franciscan Alliance versus Price, stating the department's desire to assess the reasonableness, necessity, and efficacy of Section 1557 implementing rule and to initiate rulemaking proceedings to reconsider the rule. The Leadership Conference and our partners on this call strongly oppose any reopening of the rule. The coalition has raised our concerns with Secretary of Health and Human Services Thomas Price and Director of the Office for Civil Rights Roger Severino. All individuals need to be protected from discrimination in health coverage or care, and thus we fully expect that HHS should be enforcing the law. Let me now turn it back to Jeremy, who I know is going to be introducing our other remaining speakers for their remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Vinita. Thanks for opening this up for us. Next, we'll hear from Judith Lichtman. She's Senior Advisor of the National Partnership for Women and Families, and she is also chair of the Leadership Conference Board of Directors. Judith, please provide us your thoughts on this matter.
Thank you so much. The Affordable Care Act, Section 1557, was a historic step forward for our nation. For generations, sex discrimination in healthcare, in pricing and coverage, in research and access to care, and more has persisted, causing grave harm certainly to women's health. Until Section 1557 became law, there was no way to challenge most of that discrimination. Section 1557 changed all of that. It's the first federal civil rights law ever to broadly prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex in federally funded health programs. The final rule requires that women be treated equally with men in the health care they receive. It prohibits the denial of health care or health care coverage based on an individual's sex. That includes discrimination based on pregnancy, and it includes strong protections for transgender people in health facilities and programs that receive federal money. The Affordable Care Act's 1557 is, of course, even broader. It prohibits discrimination based not only on sex, but also on race, color, national origin, disability, and age. It covers healthcare providers, hospitals, clinics, community health centers, insurers, and other entities that receive federal funds. Section 1557 is really a game changer. Over time, it holds the promise of helping reduce the disparities that plague our healthcare system. On a personal note, I've worked to advance women's and civil rights in this country for more than 45 years, and in that time, we've not had an advance more meaningful than the Affordable Care Act, Section 1557. Losing it would be every bit as devastating to efforts to advance fairness and equality in this nation as anything President Trump has done. All of us on this call and our many allies and supporters will fight to protect Section 1557. We're absolutely determined not to return to the days when there was no recourse against sex discrimination in health care. And I thank you, Jeremy. I know you're going to move on to some of our other speakers. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Judith. Thanks so much. Let's now turn to Mara Udelman, the managing attorney of the National Health Law Program's D.C. office. And Mara is going to get us caught up a bit on the on several areas here, but in particular we'll touch on some of the litigation surrounding Section 1557. Mara?
Great, thanks, Jeremy.
Okay.
Great, thanks. The reason that we are having this call today, and it's very timely, is because of developments in a lawsuit that Vanita mentioned, Franciscan Alliance versus originally Burwell. In that case, eight states and several religiously affiliated healthcare organizations sued the Department of Health and Human Services in the Northern District of Texas, challenging how HHS defined sex and sex discrimination in the final regulation implementing Section 1557. A single judge issued a nationwide preliminary injunction, and in the proceedings of that case is where HHS issued the statement that Vanita referred to, that it is considering reopening the final Section 1557 regulation to reconsider some of the issues that were brought in this case. Now, as both Vanita and Judy mentioned, the 1557 provision in the Affordable Care Act was groundbreaking. And we have to go back and look at the fact that this provision was included in the Affordable Care Act after over a year and a half of debate and consideration of that law. And then HHS took a lot of very measured and intentional steps in interpreting Section 1557 and coming to the conclusions it did when it promulgated the final regulation. First, HHS released what's called a request for information back in 2003 to garner public input on the scope of the proposed rulemaking to implement this provision. After considering the comments received on this request for information, HHS then released a notice of proposed rulemaking in September 2015, and almost 25,000 public comments were received in response to that proposed rule. So we have a very long and detailed process by which HHS came to its decision to define Section 1557's coverage of sex discrimination to include protection from discrimination on the basis of sex, including gender identity and termination of pregnancy. After the rule was finalized is when the regulation was challenged, and now we have this current administration deciding to potentially reopen this rule. But it's important to note that politics alone cannot justify a change in a regulation. According to legal requirements to amend or change final rules, HHS must actually have some legitimate basis, such as new evidence or information, to make a change, or its decision can ultimately be challenged in court. Now, while the case at issue is focusing on the definition of sex discrimination, I do want to mention that many of us are also concerned because of the other groups that are protected under the purview of Section 1557. As both Vanita and Judith mentioned, Section 1557 prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, color, national origin, disability, and sex. So if HHS reopens this final regulation, we're concerned that it might not just be the sex discrimination provisions that will be open for reconsideration. In particular, one piece of the regulation required healthcare entities to provide language services, including oral interpreting and written translations, to individuals with limited English proficiency. And one way of helping limited English proficiency patients and clients know that they have rights to interpreters and to language services was a requirement to include a tagline, a very short sentence in a non-English language that helps inform non-English speakers how to get and request language services and what their rights are. We know that some insurers and other healthcare providers have raised concerns about this requirement. They haven't asked to change the rule. They want clarification and sub-regulatory guidance. But just as much as we're concerned about potential changes to the definition of sex discrimination, we're also concerned that HHS may reopen other parts of the rule protecting limited English proficient patients, people with disabilities, older Americans, et cetera, when they reopen this rule. So we're really hoping that they don't reopen the rule at all, and certainly that they don't take a heavy hand given the opportunity they look likely to proceed. So I'm going to turn it back to Jeremy so we can get some more detailed information about some of the issues specifically at play in the Franciscan Alliance case.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Maura. And now let's do turn to Harper Jean Tobin. She is the Director of Policy for the National Center for Transgender Equality. Harper Jean, can you join in and provide some context to this?
Absolutely, Jeremy. The current rule reflects nearly two decades of case law in saying that the ACA's sex discrimination prohibition outlaws bias against transgender people. That's something that courts across the country have said under a variety of federal sex discrimination laws. The rule clarifies that providers must treat transgender patients with dignity. It also clarifies that insurance companies may not single out transgender consumers with coverage exclusions and may not deny coverage for people who need tests or treatments that are not typical for their gender. The rule's non-discriminatory approach to health insurance has strong support from every major medical association. Recently, voices as diverse as the American Psychological Association and the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association have urged HHS not to roll back the rule's sex discrimination provision. Over 1.5 million Americans are transgender, and unfortunately, it's been clear for some time that transgender Americans are among the groups that Trump administration is fixated on, frankly, persecuting. First, they came after transgender students, then after our military service members. Rolling back the provisions of this rule would be to tell hospitals and insurers that it is A-OK to turn transgender people away. In fact, OCR Director Severino has in the past called guaranteeing basic dignity for transgender people a radical gender ideology, and has persistently referred to medical treatments for gender dysphoria for transgender people as, quote, controversial and, quote, unsettled, despite their endorsement by every major medical association. At NCTE, we hear almost every day from transgender people facing discrimination in healthcare, being told, we won't treat people like you, hearing healthcare providers refer to them as it or freak, or being denied coverage for medications and treatments that are provided to other people. Section 1557 has helped us make tremendous progress, with HHS in the past years resolving many cases of harmful discrimination against patients. And a survey of 2017 individual health plans in 16 states found that almost all of them had, in response to 1557, eliminated broad exclusions on transition-related health care. Although rolling back the 1557 rule would not change federal law, it threatens to erode these advances by putting a seal of approval on discrimination. For example, the state of Wisconsin eliminated state employee plan exclusions that targeted transgender people in response to the 1557 law and regulation. But in response to the Trump administration's plans to change that rule, Wisconsin reinstated their exclusion and is now facing a federal lawsuit. NCTE has heard from a handful of private plans starting to take similar action to reinstate discrimination. While the full impact is impossible to predict, one thing is clear to us. No one should face discrimination when it comes to health care. And that would be more likely if this rule is rolled back. It would be harder for transgender consumers to assert their rights and get help.
Harper Jean, thank you for that information. Before we open it up to any questions, though, we need to hear from Fatima Goss-Graves. She's the president and CEO of the National Women's Law Center. So, Fatima, please fill us in on your organization's take on this matter.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me. The National Women's Law Center was founded 45 years ago, the same year that Title IX was passed, and has been working to expand opportunities for women and girls throughout the course of those four decades. And through that time period, we really have learned what it has meant to lack sex discrimination protections in healthcare. We know that for women in particular, it meant that insurers maintained a practice of routinely charging women more than men for the same health coverage. It meant that insurers treated conditions specific to women, like having a cesarean, as a reason to deny coverage of insurance. And it meant that insurance companies and employers refused to cover services that women need, whether you're talking about prescription birth control, maternity care, even when they covered things men needed. I also think that some of the complaints brought by the National Women's Law Center give a window into what is at stake now for women. We, under Section 1557, brought challenges to the practice used by several employers that refused to cover pregnancy care for dependents of their employees. And if you think about it, you know, the average cost of maternity care is in the tens of thousands. And that's the difference between bankruptcy and having the ability to actually support your family. As you've heard from the other speakers, attacks on Section 1557 by this administration are coming in many forms. There's the potential regulatory process and the litigation. Things have also been happening quietly, with critical language disappearing from websites, and we've used FOIA to try to monitor their approach to enforcement. But whether the Trump administration is trashing the critical Section 1557 regulations in court or through a formal process or really quietly, we know that all of this spells serious trouble for women. Any effort to define sex discrimination in a way that carves out pregnancy termination, in a way that carves out gender identity, goes against the longstanding way that Title IX and Title VII have been applied, and would really set 1557 apart from these other core non-discrimination laws. And when you square all of this with the administration's efforts to add in religious exemptions to laws across the board, we also have a deep worry that people generally will be denied important health care. We have recently seen religion invoked in countless ways to deny access to an increasingly broad range of health services, but hospitals and other health providers that take taxpayer dollars should not be allowed to discriminate or use their beliefs as a reason to refuse to treat or serve a patient. I will close with this, again, with a reminder we don't know when or how this all will play out. But what I do know is the Law Center and really this broader coalition stand really ready to protect and defend this critical rule, because we know that when you're talking about healthcare, you're talking about lives that are at stake, you're talking about broader economic security that's at stake, and we're talking about futures that are at stake. So thank you, and I will pass it back to the leadership conference.
Okay, Fatima, thank you. Thanks to all the speakers for those enlightening, very helpful introductions. Before we turn it, now we're ready to turn it over to questions from reporters, and I would just ask the operator to remind reporters to, if they can, direct their question to a specific speaker. But operator, if you could please give instructions to those on the call to ask questions, I would greatly appreciate that.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. Your first question comes from Chris Johnson with Washington Blade.
This question, I'm going to direct towards Vanita, but if anybody else in the call wants to chime in, I'd welcome that as well. In fact, I have two questions. My first question is, U.S. District Judge Reed O'Connor has issued an injunction prohibiting enforcement of the rule of determining that sex discrimination applies to transgender people and women who have had abortions. Can you just speak to the importance of keeping the rule on the books, even though there is a court order barring enforcement of this regulation?
Go ahead.
This is Fatima Goss-Graves. Since I know Vanita had to leave early, I'm happy to jump in, if that's all right.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. So I think the first thing, it's important to point out that it was a really radical move to do this sort of nationwide injunction, and that the approach really contradicted decades of discrimination law. And because the Trump administration noted in its documents that it was reevaluating the reasonableness of the rule, all of it has been stayed. And I think what's at stake in this litigation is what is at stake on these core parts of Section 1557 work. That includes the work it would do to address the sort of discrimination that takes form of when people discriminate and penalize women who have had abortions, or when people discriminate and penalize based on gender identity. That is the crux of what's at stake in that decision, and it's really shameful that the Trump administration indicated that it was walking away from that important rule.
Great. My second question is, can a transgender person or a woman who has had an abortion, will they still have the standing to sue in court just under the underlying law, even if the regulation was in the books?
For sure. And I think it's important to note that people were filing lawsuits even before there were regulations. In part, that's what prompted the HHS, in part, to actually finally issue these long overdue regulations. And other circuits, in fact, every other circuit has found in ways that are different from that, from this district court decision, which is truly an outlier understanding of what sex discrimination protections mean. So for sure, people can go to court and under Section 1557 directly, which maintains a private act right of action. If anything, what's happening right now is there's lots of confusion from the administration's positions that it's taken in court and what message it is sending to the healthcare industry broadly about their obligations.
This is Harper Dean. I would only add that it really is unusual what the Justice Department and the administration are doing in failing to defend a federal law, particularly when the challenge to it goes against so much case law, and that while it's absolutely true that transgender consumers and anyone facing discrimination continues and will continue to have the ability to have their rights vindicated in federal court, it is also the job of HHS to clearly instruct covered entities on what the law is so that litigation can be avoided, and to investigate complaints through a process that is far less costly than litigation. And those things may not happen based on the rule change the administration is looking at. So we could have more discrimination and fewer options to prevent or address it, despite the fact that individuals will have the ability to go to court.
So this is Judy Lichtman. I want to put a fine point on what my colleagues have just said. Yes, people would have the individual right to go to court, but it significantly changes the burden, if you will.
HHS has the burden to ensure that nobody gets federal money that discriminates. And that's what the 1557 regulation gave life to, if you will. To argue that an individual can take on the responsibility and pursue their rights under other laws, sure. But that doesn't either undermine or negate HHS's really important obligation under the Affordable Care Act 1557 to make sure that nobody gets federal money if they discriminate.
All right. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Operator, do we have any other questions in the queue from reporters?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1. And we have no further questions at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank all our speakers for joining today's call, and those of you who called in to listen, it's greatly appreciated. The Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act is, again, integral to protecting and or combating discrimination in the healthcare system, and this should be on the radar of many reporters who are covering the Trump administration's efforts to undermine or sabotage the Affordable Care Act. We will be sending out a press release to all reporters who RSVP'd for this call and many others with comments from the speaker, from our speakers from today's call, as well as a link to the audio of this call that should be available within the next few hours or so. But the press release will be going out very soon. Again, thank you to all the speakers and to all others who called in and listened to this listened to the call. It's greatly appreciated. And this is the National Health Law Program and the Leadership Conference for Civil and Human Rights that brought you the call. That's it for today. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
This does conclude today's conference. You may now disconnect.